Will you continue in prayer with me? Lord, now may the words of my mouth and may the meditations of all of our hearts be acceptable in your sight. O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. I have a question for you. What is time? What is time? No, really, what is time? How would you define it? How would you explain what time is? I'm asking for a lot of reasons, not the least of which is that just yesterday, I was trying to figure out how to structure time after the arrival of twin newborns. And today, I'm running out of time to plan the celebration of their graduation next month. I thought I had time, but it vanished. I tried to hang on to it, but I couldn't. I thought I knew what it was, but now I'm not so sure how it works. No less a thinker than St. Augustine asked the same question, writing, "What is time? If no one asks me, I know. If I wish to explain it to one who asketh, I know not." If we think about it too much, defining time becomes difficult. But that has not stopped us from trying to master it. The concept of time management is a key doctrine, maybe the key doctrine, in our cult of productivity, which may be the most popular religion in our country. If you can manage time, you can manage your life. And if you can manage your life, you can succeed. And if you can succeed, well, you win. You win at life. Good job. Why be good enough if you can actually be best? Some of us would love to be best at life. But for a lot of us, the pandemic blew all of that up. We found ourselves adrift from our familiar structures and systems and routines for managing time and managing life. Time began to function for many of us like an unpredictable accordion, arbitrarily compressing and stretching and compressing. A week might stretch out and slow unexpectedly, and then 2 months would blur right by. How can you succeed at life when all the old methods and markers of management and control suddenly don't work so well anymore? And now here we are, 2 years in, still trying to find our way back towards some kind of stability and certainty and mastery. We feel the pressure of catching up with life and succeeding at it, of gaining control of our hours and our days. We know what time it is, but what is time? In his book, From Eternity to Here, The Quest for the Ultimate Theory of Time, theoretical physicist Sean Carroll argues that despite our everyday experience of time, few people can actually give a simple explanation of what it is. Carroll pursues a theory of time, starting with an observation that seems simple and self-evident, saying, "The most mysterious thing about time is that it has a direction. The past is different from the future." Again, might seem simple and self-evident to us, but he shows that it's not all that simple. Physicists call this the arrow of time. And Carroll says the arrow of time is a brute fact of our universe, maybe the brute fact of our universe, that things happen in one order and not the reverse. You cannot unscramble an egg. You cannot unring a bell. You cannot undo a pandemic. The arrow of time, the fact that time moves only in one direction, is an essential property of life itself. Carroll says it's also a deep feature of what it means to be a conscious person. The fact that we remember the past, but not the future. And yet, according to the laws of physics, all aspects of time are the same, past, present, and future. They're all on equal footing. If we could somehow stand outside of time, or outside of this moment in time, and see and contemplate all of space and time at once, then we would see it all. We would see past, present, and future all at once, and we would see that it's all the same, all on equal footing. But in terms of how we actually live it, how we actually perceive reality, it is not at all the case that past, present, and future are the same. They don't even seem equally real. We carry pictures of the past in our heads in the form of memories. We know the past exists. And if we pay attention in the present moment, we also experience the profound reality of the present. We know it exists. We are in it right now. But when it comes to the future, all we have is imagination, prediction, expectation, maybe hope. It doesn't actually exist, not in the same way as the past or the present, not for us. The past exists, the present exists, but the future? It's not really real, not in the same way. The arrow of time has only one direction. It only points from past to future. It only moves like that. And for a lot of us, this reality is painful. Some of us would love to be able to turn that arrow around, point it back towards a past we would like to revisit, a past where we've had to leave good parts of our lives, good parts of ourselves, maybe the best parts of our lives, maybe even the best, most beloved people in our lives. Others of us are tied to the past for different reasons. Not so much because the best part of life is back there for us, but because of hard memories, hurt, anger, guilt, regret. For some of us, the past is a burden we drag with us everywhere we go. The arrow of time points forward, but the weight of the past anchors that arrow in a way that keeps us a bit stuck. And then others of us would be content just to be able to pause that arrow for a bit. We aren't so much feeling the weight of a haunted past or the pull of a glorious one as we are feeling the pressure of the fleeting present moment. Couldn't we just hit pause for a little bit? Couldn't we just stop the flow of time for a moment or more? Let the baby stay a baby a bit longer. Let the teenagers stay at home a little bit longer. Let every good and tender, fragile thing stay just perfectly as it is for one more moment. And then maybe one more. But the arrow of time does not pause or stop, and it moves only in one direction, and it does not slow for anyone. The people of Israel in exile knew this as well as anyone, or they should have. It had been more than 50 years since the Babylonians first invaded their city and hauled away the royals. And then two more waves of deportations would follow, with the Babylonians capturing and carrying away the official leaders and the warriors and the artisans and the smiths. And over time, all that was left was the poor. And then, with the city stripped of leadership and the economic base crushed, and the people starving to death, then the Babylonians laid siege to Jerusalem. The city fell. The Babylonians pillaged it. They destroyed the temple. And then they made the kingdom of Judah part of their own empire. Thousands of people lost everything, land, home, livelihood, family. Deported to different parts of Babylon, they were homesick and alienated, cut off from the rhythms and structures and institutions that connected them to each other and reminded them of who they were. It was a disaster, personally and communally. The exiles were traumatized, demoralized, and displaced in every way, physically, socially, emotionally, economically, theologically. And they struggled with the core feature of who they were as a people, which was this: what was their worship supposed to look like now that their temple was gone and they no longer lived in their homeland with their people? What they had left was their stories, their memories of what God had done for them and of what God had told them about who they were. Which is to say, what they had was their past. The most significant of those stories, the one that anchored the arrow of time for them, was the story of the Exodus. When God made a way through the sea for their ancestors. This was their master story, their founding story, their creation story, really, the one that called them into being as a people, God's people. The story of their creation and their deliverance. And in exile, they couldn't help but wonder, why didn't God work that way anymore? God made a way through the sea. Why didn't God make a way for them to survive the Babylonian siege? Why didn't God protect them against captivity? Into this long trauma and disaster, the prophet Isaiah speaks a new word from God. First, he reminds them who God is, their deliverer, the one who makes a way in the sea, the one who brings chariot and horse and army and warrior and extinguishes them so God's people can live. The exiles knew all this. This was their story. But after Isaiah reminds them of who this God is and what this God has done, Isaiah announces what this God says now. Do not remember the former things or consider the things of old. I'm about to do a new thing. Even now it springs forth. Do you not perceive it? The exiles have been separated all this time from everything that tells them who they are, except for their stories, especially their central story. And now, God, through Isaiah, is telling them to forget. Forget it. Let it go. Sometimes even our best memories about what once happened get in the way of our embracing what could happen still. The exiled people of Israel seemed to think their story was over. It had already been written. That was their story back there, done. Now they were strangers in a strange land, clinging to those stories of the past, and God urges, "Forget about that. I'm about to do something new. Don't you see?" Instead of singing, "Anything you can do, I can do better," God is announcing, "Anything I can do better." Once God made a way through the sea, now God will make a way through the desert. Once God made a way out, now God will make a way home. "I will make a way in the wilderness," God promises, "and rivers in the desert, and the wild animals will honor me." God does not promise to remove the wilderness or to take away the wild animals. God does not promise the way home will be easy. What God promises is to make a way where there had not been one. And it will not look like the way God made before. God is going to do something new. God is going to do something better. The action lies with God and not them. What the invitation is for them to let it go and look and try to perceive that God is still acting in a new way. And then respond. The invitation is then to respond. Isaiah understands what their return to Jerusalem, to home, will be. This is a new Exodus, different from the past Exodus. Their return will not happen overnight. The exiles have been gone for more than half a century, and their bags are not packed. They've put down roots. This will all take time, but it will happen. The people will make their way home. They will rebuild their temple, and they will worship freely together there. We have not dealt with half a century of trauma, but our 2-year global disaster has been plenty traumatic. And yet the arrow of time will not slow or stop or reverse direction or let us somehow catch up. It just keeps pointing forward, pushing forward. After exile, after lockdown, after life as we know it has been forever altered, how do we begin to make a way forward towards an uncertain future? Like the people making their way home after exile, we fumble. We fumble our way forward, individually and as a church and as a community. We try. We try to connect with each other. We try to worship our God and to minister to a broken world. And none of it feels the way it did before. None of it is as comfortable or as easy as it once was, or at least as we remember it. After these past 2 years, life together is just more challenging, and life apart isn't very easy either. The arrow of time points forward, and everything it points to is a big unknown blank. And after all the uncertainty we've already been through, that is not all that reassuring. But the word from the Waymaker God is for all exiles, including us. It is the beginning of life after trauma, or maybe even life still in the midst of trauma. The word is, "Look, I'm about to do a new thing. Even now it springs forth. Do you perceive it? Can you perceive it? The new reality ahead of us is unknown, which is hard for most of us because we cannot manage or control what does not yet exist. But God can. God will. The new reality ahead of us belongs to God. It is real for God. The future is God's, which means it is good. Our future is God is good because God is in it. We don't have to engineer it. We don't have to make it. We don't even have to make the way. All we have to do is look and see if we can, and trust if we can't see, and respond. Everything that has happened is history. Every heartbreak and every happiness, it's all history. It is real, it exists, but it's past, it is gone. Let it go. Let go of what you thought you knew. Let go your expectations of how life is supposed to work, of how God works. Let go your expectations even of yourself, of your community, and look and see, even now, God is doing a new thing. However tired or disillusioned you are, God is doing a new thing. Whatever hurt or struggle or sadness or anger is in your life right now, God is doing a new thing. Even if you cannot see a way forward, God is doing a new thing. I cannot explain what time is, but I know what time it is. It is turnaround time. It is time to let go the past. It is time to trust God. It is time to move forward in faith. God is doing a new thing, and it is good. It will always be good. It is good. It will be so good. Look. Do you see it? Do you see it?